I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
World, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. I know I went on a bit of a rant last week about the SAG-AFTRA elections, but they're super important. Remember, these are the people that we put in charge to renegotiate our contracts, fight for residuals, fight for privacy, fight for safety, fight for all the things that we count on being in a union. So if you have not voted, if you're a part of SAG-AFTRA, if you have not voted yet, do that ASAP. Get those ballots in the mail right now. In fact, do it while you're listening to this. It'll be a good, you know, a good thing to listen to while you're filling out your SAG ballot. Today on the show, we have my dear friend Paul Nigro. He has been in so many things on television. He's been in films. He has done a lot of theater work as well. He's a choreographer, an actor, a singer, an announcer. He does basically everything. He's super inspiring in the fact that he is one of those people that has found a way to stay creative and work professionally his whole life as a creative, which is really what, you know, all of our goals are, right? Is to be a creative professional and be able to live solely on that. So he's super, super inspiring. And we did a show a few years together called Acting Dead, which is a really funny show. It won a Primetime Emmy. And yeah, so here's my conversation with my friend Paul. And welcome to the show, Mr. Paul Nigro.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You know, I love doing this show because I get to talk to people that, like, I've known for so long, and yet I don't know, like, your life story, your acting journey. Like, I just know you as Paul. I know you as my friend.
Right. I know. Isn't that strange when we work together with people so closely for a very, like, compact period of time? You're sort of in a bubble, and you don't really escape outside that bubble. and find out about all the other aspects of that person's life. Not because you don't want to.
No,
but because
just not, like,
you really
time.
Don't have the time.
Right. You don't have the time. You're on set. You're working. You're doing your thing. And we're all so busy. I mean, when you're a creative in this industry, I feel like you have a thousand things going on at once just to keep ahead and keep things going. And you especially, I mean, my Lord, triple threat. You're a director. You're a choreographer. You're a singer. You're an announcer. You're an actor. Like, you do all of the things all of the time. I don't know how you sleep.
I don't either, but quite soundly, I will say. Because I'm so tired.
I am too. I started taking this like CBD melatonin something or rather, and I'll tell you what, that'll knock you out.
For real?
Yeah.
It's so funny that so many people in the industry have a difficult time sleeping. I don't. I mean, every once in a while, I'll have difficulty, especially before a job that I'm particularly excited about. I can sleep fine before an audition.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, whatever. But the jobs that you get,
those
and you're
nerves.
Worried about them, or you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so excited about this. That's when I can't sleep. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to look my best. I need to get some sleep.
So true. I don't have a problem with naps. I'm a great napper. I can take a nap anywhere. Oh. I nap on set all the time. Like, that is my specialty in life, is napping on set.
I think you and I are kind of alone in that, because everyone else that I know says, I'm so jealous that you are able to nap. I mean, I could literally lay down on the cement and be like, I'm out for 15 minutes.
Oh, 100%. There's a funny story my mom likes to tell. We were driving from, I think we were driving from like Portland. Or I don't know what was going on, but we were in the car with friends when I was young. And I was like blasting, singing Shania Twain. And like 2 seconds later, I was just fast asleep, like just out, like straight up narcolepsy, done.
I got a real quick story. I was doing choreographing and co-directing a show on Celebrity Cruise Lines a long time ago. Not that long ago, probably about 10 years ago. And it was a brand new ship. And we had just gotten done with our put in and our rehearsals, and we were all set to go. But the ship had to do a test. You know, the Coast Guard has to do some sort of test with these new ships. And they do it at the drop of a hat, and they don't give you any warning whatsoever. And we were in the Caribbean somewhere. And they said, okay, everyone has to get off the boat.
Oh, God.
And we're going to take the boat out for 4 hours. And like, it's 12 o'clock at night. It's midnight. They're like, so what? So they literally drove into port, this tiny little port on a tiny little island where nothing was open. And it's midnight. 2,000 people that were all in the crew get off the boat. And we're sitting on this dock for 4 hours. I'm like, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
So I literally laid down on the cement, and all my friends were like, do you know how many people were walking over you and like nobody else could sleep? And you're like snoring on the cement in the middle of nowhere with 1,000 people walking over you. That's how I do it.
You know, it's a gift. It's a skill that you have been blessed with. And I'm sure a lot of people would love to have that. So tell me, you know, since we were talking about, I don't really know your life story. Tell me your life story. Huh. Where did you start? How did you get the acting bug or the entertaining bug?
I got it a long time ago when I was very young. I've always been, in fact, I just had this discussion today with a friend of mine. I've always been sort of a right brain, left brain battling person.
Yeah.
I was very smart in school, but I also had this creative side. So my practical side was always battling with my creative side. Mm-hmm. And at a very young age, I knew that I loved to perform from grade school, you know, right on up through high school and college.
You know, it's funny to me because it's, every single person I've talked to on the show says the same thing. And I really do think that if you're meant to be an entertainer, you know, when you're a kid, like it's just like in you, something in you wants to do that so badly.
Yeah, I know. And as, and I can understand parents, you know, not wanting their children to go into the entertainment field because of, and I'm not so sure that they don't necessarily believe in their kids, but I think it's more about worrying that all the rejection is going to be a hellacious life to live. Mm-hmm. And that part of it's awful, but you get to the point where if you don't have a thick enough skin to deal with that, then you probably shouldn't be in this business to begin
with.
Because, I mean, that's just part of
it.
You're constantly rejected on a daily basis, multiple times a day when you're submitted for things and you don't get called in. But you know, convincing them when it's time for you to make your own decisions, you just have to do it by showing them how much you love it and how, you know, how you can make a living doing it, and how you can be happy and be happier doing that than anything else, if that's what really makes you happy. And that's what always made me happy.
Yeah.
As a kid through high school, and I started doing musicals at a very young age. Our middle school was very theatrical. And back in Wisconsin, I'm from Wisconsin originally. And our middle school was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade okay. at that time. And we always did musicals, and I absolutely loved it. And when I got to high school, my high school wasn't as theatrical. But by that time, I started doing professional things. Mm. I'd auditioned for a show up in Milwaukee, was the closest big city where I grew up in Racine, Wisconsin. And there was a theater called the Melody Top Theater. Mm. And I auditioned for a show, Bye Bye Birdie.
Nice.
With starring Greg Brady. Oh, my God. Wow. Barry Williams wow. was the star of the show. And there I was as a 15-year-old being one of the teenagers in Bye Bye Birdie with Greg Brady. And it was a ball. And I knew right then that this was the life I wanted to have. That was the start of it all.
That's pretty spectacular, too, that your parents let you do that at such a young age, being from a small town.
They were worried because, I was 15. I just had my learner's permit, driver's license. I just started driving when the show started. So I was driving myself
wow.
to rehearsals and to the show. And they were concerned. And it was a whole different life. You're dealing with a lot of adults mm-hmm. in that world, and you grow up very quickly. And my parents kind of saw me sort of policing myself and dealing with all the ups and downs of life kind of on my own.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to intercede. They're like, he's got it. And I did, and I didn't. I mean, it was a great period of time, but it was also a big learning curve and a very, not traumatic, but it was a difficult time, dealing with professional people as a kid.
Yeah.
You're 15 years old. I can only imagine what, celebrity kid, superstars in their young, early impressionable years, what sort of toll that takes on their lives.
I talk about that a lot with my friends, particularly ones that I grew up in the industry with as child actors, and how, especially now, how different it is with child actors with social media and how accessible they are to, all these weird people on the internet. And I don't know how they do it. I don't know how it's going to affect them later on in life. I think that's going to be an interesting thing that we're going to start seeing happen in the next 10 to 20 years of the mental effects of that growing up as a child actor, but also having this social media thing. Because before, sure, there was, there's always obstacles as a child actor.
Right.
But
yeah, and there's always scrutiny and there's always critics and all that sort of stuff.
But then having that social media aspect, I don't know how kids today can do it. I feel like if I had a child who was in the industry now, I wouldn't let them be on social media.
Yeah.
Just because it's toxic.
Yeah, I think you're right. And a lot of times, parents do their best.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a parent goes into any sort of situation with their kid thinking, I'm going to do the worst thing for my kid. Now, I'm sure they all have wonderful intentions.
Right.
And, the industry tends to change people or brings situations that you may not be equipped to handle as an adult or a kid.
Yeah.
And you try certain things, and some things you fail at. You can't necessarily blame all the problems that a child actor may have on parents.
No.
But a good, strong family situation does help. It certainly helps.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for kids to be surrounded by a strong, supportive family and friends. Mm-hmm. I think having a strong circle of friends that will protect you and watch over you mm-hmm. is very, very important. My friends have been my lifesavers here in California because my family's all back in Wisconsin.
Right.
So I was here on my own, really, since I moved out here 32 years ago.
Wow. When you after you did Bye Bye Birdie in Wisconsin, did you go to college for acting?
Yes. Yeah, I did. There was a little bit of not a break, but after I did Bye Bye Birdie, I did a show in Milwaukee, a production of A Chorus Line.
Oh, wow.
As a teenager, I think I was 16 at the time, right after Bye Bye Birdie or somewhere in there. I must have been 16 because at 17, I was chosen to be in the 5,000th performance of A Chorus Line on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
They were celebrating the 5,000th anniversary, and they had this countrywide search for anyone who had done an amateur production of A Chorus Line. So I submitted my picture, and they picked me and flew me to New York.
Oh, my God.
And there I was on Broadway at 17 years old, brought my dad along, went through rehearsals. We were in the show for one night, just the 5,000th performance. And we did. It was absolutely amazing. One of the most, I guess, important moments of my career, solidifying the fact that this is what I wanted to do. However, in the rehearsal process, I brought my dad. Mm-hmm. You could be one person, so I brought my dad, and he was sitting next to the choreographer while the rehearsals were going on. And the choreographer turned to him and said, "Your son is good enough to stay here in New York and be on Broadway." And my dad said, "Nope." And you're not going to tell him that, and I'm not going to tell him that, and he's going to finish college, and then he can make that decision.
Wow.
So he told me after I graduated from college that they said, "Yeah, you could have stayed."
Oh my gosh, Dad.
Yeah, but I am so glad that I finished college, because some of my most formative years as a performer were because of the training that I had in college, and not necessarily just the training, the experience doing the shows that I did and was able to do in the college that I went to, certainly increased my knowledge about performing. Obviously it made me a better dancer, it made me a better singer, it made me a better actor, and it made me able to navigate the world of auditioning and your peers and all that sort of stuff. Because even when you go to college, auditions are brutal.
Yeah, they are. they really are. I remember there was this one casting director when I was growing up that really taught us all how rough auditioning is. I remember sitting in her office multiple times, and some kids would come out crying from the room, and I'd be like, "Ah, that wasn't an emotional scene. This is a comedy. That isn't good. that's not good." So there, that was my training. But so after college, did you go to New York then? Did you try your hand out there?
I didn't. You know, I battled with that, and I thought, do I want to go to New York or do I want to go to Los Angeles? And for some reason, I was a little more drawn to Los Angeles, number one, because I grew up in Wisconsin and I was done with the snow and cold. And I thought, all right, if I want a real change of pace and I want some good weather, I'm going to LA. And I did have a distant uncle that lived here. It was a great uncle, my grandmother's brother.
Oh, wow.
Who was out here. And I did move out here and was able to live in his pool house for a few months till I got a job on a cruise ship, singing and dancing on a cruise ship. And strangely enough, most of the work I got the first 5 to 10 years that I was out here was all theater. So it's interesting.
That's
that
so funny.
I didn't move to New York. I came to California and did mostly theater stuff at that time.
That's hysterical. Crazy. Because for those listening who don't really know, if you are an actor and you live in, a small town and you have the decision to move somewhere, New York, you go for theater, LA, you come for film and television.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so funny to me because I have so many friends who have had to move back to New York because they're the theater scene out here, it doesn't exist. I need to go out there to do what I want to do. And then you come out here and you only do theater.
I know. And I have been back to New York a few times. I moved back. There was four different situations where I could have moved to New York because of a show that I was doing. One of them was a show called Reefer Madness that actually started here in Los Angeles back in 1999. And we did the New York version. We went off Broadway in 2001. And sadly, we opened 3 days after 9/11.
Oh, no.
So that was bad timing. I moved to New York and I saw the buildings fall from my new bedroom window that I literally just moved into in Brooklyn.
Oh, my God.
On September 10th, I moved literally September 10th to an apartment in Brooklyn. And the next morning, I could see smoke billowing past my window and opened up my curtains. And
there it was.
There she blows.
Wow.
But it was, So we opened and we were open for a couple months. And then we just couldn't sustain. There were no pre-sale.
Right.
You know, pre-ticket sales.
Nobody was
sales.
Going to New York. You couldn't even like go to DC. You couldn't do anything back then. I remember we went on a school trip to Washington, DC, and like half the stuff they wanted to take us to, we couldn't go to because things were still in like code red.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
So, I mean, I guess the question is, it's like, did you want to stick on the theater path or did you want to do more film and television?
You know, that's a great question because I love both mediums so much. And it kind of, the seesaw kind of goes, you know, the scale goes back and forth. I love the intimacy of television and film because nothing grabs me more than very realistic acting and real moments. And that really can only come with the camera, you know, with television and film. I mean, of course you can be real on stage, but there's always a bigness to stage that unless you're in a very, very intimate theater, a very, very small theater space, it's just bigger. You have to be bigger. And everyone in theater knows that. And it's oftentimes not, well, it's never an easy thing to go back and forth. Mm-mm. I mean, unless you have experience in both and you know the feeling of it, the actual, the literal feeling of what it's like acting for both mediums. It can be daunting. Either one can be daunting. Back in the day, I remember whenever television and film stars would try to do theater, they were like, how do you memorize this whole thing? all at once, a whole show. We only have to memorize like 4 or 5 lines, at a time. And then we just let it go. Yeah, it's a little different having to memorize an entire show and perform it 8 times a week. It's a little different. And then the opposite, come from theater and you're like, what do you mean I'm being too big? I can't use my hands like this on screen or move my eyes around or move my eyebrows up and down. No, let's pull it in, rein it in. But I love, to answer your question, I love both. And I love going back and forth from both. I think it's an incredible challenge. And there's rewards to be had in both. There's things you can do for the camera that you just can't do on stage and vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, they're completely different forms. They're different skill sets. I mean, down to using your diaphragm, it is so different. Oh,
absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about working on a cruise line as a performer, because that has to be fun, but also I feel like I would be scared that the ship was going to go down.
Oh my gosh, that was the least of our worries.
Really?
Of course, I was much younger. Yeah, back when I did that, I literally just moved out here. So I was 21, 22. And being out on the ocean and traveling all around to different places and being paid to do it and singing and dancing and frankly, drinking a lot. And we just, all we did was party and go to
midnight
ports
pizza.
And and then and we would sing and dance our butts off every other night. And we had officer status, so they wanted us to be out and about with the people, mingling with all the guests. And it was great. It was an absolutely wonderful time. Huh. Some of the most difficult shows I've done were on that ship because, they're fast paced, and the dancing was some of the hardest and best dancing I've ever done. As far as the ship moving or going down, I never worry about that. I didn't have a problem with the motion of the ocean. Except for one ship, I was in between contracts, and usually you do 6-month contracts. Yeah. Sometimes they can be longer depending on what cruise line you're working for. I worked for Princess Cruises back in the day, and I had been transferred to one ship just for a month. They needed a replacement. So I was in between contracts, and it was one of the smaller ships. I usually did their bigger ships that had anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 people on board. And this one was a smaller one. And actually, the ship that they used for filming the Love Boat, it was that was the Love Boat exterior whenever they showed that for the actual Love Boat. And I got to do a commercial with Gavin McLeod
for
Princess Cruises, which was kind of amazing. And he just passed away. He was such a sweet man, such a sweet guy. Anyway, that ship, the smaller the ship, the more they roll with the ocean.
Oh, no.
And I will never forget. For a week, the shows were canceled because you could not. I mean, it was dangerous. All the chairs and everything was moving. All the set pieces were moving back and forth. You could see the curtains going back and forth. But in our rooms, and we would be watching a television or a movie, with our friends. And the room would go like this and this and this. Like it felt like it was on a 90-degree angle. God. Everything would fall to one side. And you're like, are we going to tip over? And then it would slowly come back and then go to the other side and everything would fall to the other side. Like, surely we're going to tip over.
Oh, my God.
And that was probably the most scared I've been, but it literally was not. I don't remember being terrified. I just remember it was a weird feeling how slow it went. Slowly it went back and forth. But other than that, all the other times it was fine.
Oh, wow. You've been on everything in your career. You've done it all. What do you think is your favorite? Because you've done a lot of TV work. What do you think's your favorite show that you've guested on or reoccurred on?
Oh my gosh. I think my favorite was I'd have to say Buffy, the Vampire Slayer.
The best.
That was, and I'd never gotten to do prosthetic makeup before. Yeah. And I was really excited about it. And boy, was it a crash course in prosthetics.
Really?
Because my whole face was covered with prosthetics. I was a demon that actually got to beat up Spike. I don't know if you've ever watched the show.
That's like a dream come true. Although Spike was my boy.
He was pretty amazing and a great guy. And I got to punch him out in a bar and then throw him outside and get in his face and tell him that I was going to kick his butt and all the while wearing this makeup. And it took, it took, strangely enough, it took longer to take it off than it did to put it on, because I have to be very, very meticulous with the manner in which they take it off, because that those prosthetics stick to your entire face. God. There's glue over your entire face, because in order to make those your face look like it's a natural face and move with your movements and smiles and scowls, it has to be adhered to every portion of your skin. And it was, boy, was that ever all over my skin. But the thing that I remember the most, and I had a ball doing it, they did alter my voice, but they did it in real time. They had a microphone. My microphone was hooked up so that they would alter my voice as it was going into the recording.
Wow.
So, you know, I sounded like a demon, but you know, they said, whatever you do, talk like a normal person. Don't try and sound like a demon. You have to sound like a normal person, because that's the only way this tweaking will work, is if you act like you're just act. Okay. Just act.
Wow.
Like a normal person. That was so interesting to me. And the other interesting thing, and it was a really fun scene. It was like this long, a moment, and it was just so much fun to do. But I remember it was one person's job, because I had contacts in my eyes to play the demon that literally covered your entire eyeball. Ooh. I mean, I wear contacts as it is, but to put these eyeballs in, like, I still dream about it to this day, that I have to put in a contact lens that's the size of a movie camera lens or something, and I just can't open my eyes wide enough in these nightmares. But they would suck onto your entire eyeball, so you could feel it all the way inside your eye. And it was this person's job in the wardrobe department to literally follow me around all day and just go, do you need eye drops? Do you need eye drops? Are your eyes dried out? And I was like, I'm fine. Just this person following me around with eye drops all day long. Must have been a horrific job to have.
Well, and she probably had to do it, or he, whoever it was, had to do it with every single person that they did contacts with, too. So you can imagine those days spent just following an actor around, be like, you want eye drops?
Yeah. I know. And I'm sure that they've perfected those contact lenses. And we've both worn, you know, crazy contact lenses. But those ones were so big and so, I guess, not breathable, like the new ones that they made. That was back in, you know, right? 2000. I think it was 2000. So it was 20 years ago. 21 years ago.
So on this show, we like to share audition stories, either ones that have gone awry or sad ones or happy ones. Gosh. I love the comical ones too. There was a great story last year where a girl almost kicked a casting director in the face doing a high kick.
Oh my gosh.
Do you have any stories that you would like to share with the audience?
Oh, I have a few, but I have to start with the ones that, you know, the one that got away. And most of my stories are, strangely enough, all my theater auditions, my musical theater and Broadway auditions, because the situations you get into are always hysterical. And my biggest, it's not a regret because I didn't get it, but I certainly had a wonderful audition. It was for Rent. First came out, I knew some of the people involved because I was working at Universal Studios at the time. And the show that I was doing back then was called The Beetlejuice Rock and Roll Graveyard
Review.
The
best show.
Yeah. And some of the most talented people I've ever worked with did that show. And a lot of them were cast in Rent. Mm. And the very first cast, workshops, and then they went to started off Broadway, and then it moved to Broadway. And when they moved to Broadway and they started casting the tour, they brought in a bunch of us, or they came to LA to audition some of the other people that worked at that show. And I was one of those people. So I had like 3 or 4 callbacks in LA, and it was for the role of Mark. Mm. And
I can see that.
It was such a great part and such a great show at the time. I identified with it much more then than I do now.
Right. Now, I was just telling my best friend, I was like, okay, y'all are crazy. Benny wanted to give you a free apartment and a freaking place to make your shit, and you said no? I would love
my God.
That, Benny. Where
Jillian,
are
you? You don't understand. That has been the bane of my existence with that show from the get-go. Like, you guys, he's giving you a place to stay for free. And you can do all your
and
work.
And you have a studio.
All of your artistic work. Oh, my God.
Who
anyway.
Cares? Do it.
Be that as it may. I finally was flown out to New York, and I had my final callback. And I thought, okay, for this final callback, I'm going for it. and I dyed my hair blonde.
Nice.
And it did not work out. It was not blonde. It was orange. It was kind of green at times, depending on the lighting or what day it was. And it did not work. And I walked into that audition and they were like, who are you? And literally like they had seen me for the first time, not knowing that they had already seen me four times back in LA.
Oh my God.
And I was coming in for my final callback. And I didn't even get, I think I sang part of one song. And they were like, okay, thank you. And I went, wait a second. I sang like four songs before. And, you know, can I do this other thing? And they're like, nope, that's all we need. And I was like, but it's me. It's Paul. I dyed my, I mean, I didn't say this, but, you know, I should have said, hey, I dyed my hair. Maybe I shouldn't have. They literally didn't recognize me or who I was or remembered me. And that was it.
Wow.
I blew the whole thing. Dyeing my hair orange or green or whatever it was to try and mold myself into who was already playing that role. And it was so dumb of me to do that because they cast several guys for the role of Mark that did not have blonde hair.
Right. Well, and that's it and brings that, up an interesting point because there's so many stories out there, you know, like Sterling K. Brown shaving his head for what was an American Crime Story when he went to do the audition and Leighton Meester dyeing her hair brown for her test for Blair in Gossip Girl. She was a blonde. Like, she dyed it right before she went in to test for it because she knew that that's what they wanted. So it's interesting to hear that backfire.
Yeah, yeah. And it can, you know, and more I've learned as an actor throughout the years and decades that the more you are yourself and the more you bring of yourself to the audition, the better chance you have of booking that job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to show them that who you are is maybe better than what was written down on that page in the character description. Because most of the times, unless it's very, very, very specific, like we need a 300-pound weightlifter, you know, they're not going to go with some, you know, marathon runner. But for the most part, if they're looking for the best actor or actress, they're going to see you being the best version of you and your what you want to bring to the character to the table. And that's what they're going to see. And if it doesn't work for this part, it's going to work for another part.
Right. Well, because
and that's just something that
what I've you learned. Bring to a character is what is, you know, part of you. And that what is what makes it unique. Because if we were all doing the same thing at the, you know, the same moments, the same timing, the same. That's why, like when I was younger, I didn't love getting coached because there was like two or three coaches out here that would see every kid. And so you knew like, oh, I know that this coach has seen like five other girls for this exact same role. That's not a good thing.
No,
we need to stay away from that. But I mean, that's just like, it's what makes acting fun is bringing like parts of you and adding your uniqueness and your quirks into a character, but then also creating the character to mold into something different than who you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, and two of the shows of the Broadway shows that I got, I did the tour of Sister Act, the musical and First Wives Club, the out of town tryout in Chicago. Both of those were so much fun to do. And both of them, I had horrible auditions in the beginning. I mean, it was insane, but I owned it. And especially for, I kind of mixed the two up. I can't remember which one was for which, but I went into one of those and I think it was for Sister or for a First Wives Club. I went into that audition and I sang some Billy Joel song because they wanted pop music. And I sang this Billy Joel song and I must've cracked like my way through that entire song. For some reason, I just could not nail the notes. And by the time I got done, I'm like, you guys, I just gave you more crack than a plumber's convention in that show. And they laughed their butts off. And literally the next year they called me back and said, we want you in this show.
Wow.
I went, what? How you possibly want me in this show after that? And like, because you owned it and you were yourself and you didn't apologize for it. You just went on and that we love that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people we want to work with. And a similar thing happened with Sister Act. I had gone in for my callback and this was in Los Angeles. And literally the night before I had laryngitis.
Oh my God.
I was with some friends in Big Bear. And I'm like, you guys, I have an audition tomorrow for a Broadway show. And I can't speak. And they're like, okay, shut up. Don't say anything else tonight. And you know, I had to drive 4 hours into LA from Big Bear for my audition. But I had to practice the music somehow. Mm. So I would like trying very, very quietly practice and nothing would come out. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to show up at that audition and do the best I can. And I got to that audition and by the grace of God, something came down and let me sing my little butt off. And they said, okay, now we want you to read this part. Now we want you to sing this part. Oh my God. We're going to raise it one step just to see how high you can sing. And I'm like, I can do it one more time and that's it. I can't sing anymore. And I didn't tell them that, but that was going on in my head. And when I got done, they're like, you're in.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you're like, can I please not talk for the rest of the day and also maybe the rest of the week?
Yeah. I hope the show's not going to start for a while because I'm out. Done. I am done for a
while. That's so funny. I once had a callback was it a callback or a second callback? I can't remember. But I had my initial audition. My voice was gone. I think I went to a concert like 2 days before or something. My voice was just gone, dead, right? It was just rasp. That's all you heard. It was very Natasha Lyonne. I mean, really raspy. And when I went in, I think they loved it because the role was like, it was a lead in a pilot and it was like a, like an IT, like grungy type of girl. They probably thought, oh, this fits perfect. She has such a great voice. So then I get the call back and I'm like, fuck. My voice sounds normal again. So literally for an hour beforehand, I'm screaming, like scream singing in my car, trying to get my voice to sound different than like it normally does. Because I wanted to try and like emulate what my voice had been.
Oh my gosh. Were you able to do it? Were you able to do it?
Yeah, kind of. It ended up being like super cracky though. Like it wasn't, wasn't what I had sounded like before. It's like when Phoebe gets a cold in Friends. Do you remember that episode of Friends where she gets a cold and then she's like, no, give me my cold back. I sound sexier with it.
truly. You know, I think about that all the time with my voiceover friends. You know, that's one of the, you know, another thing that we do and voiceover stuff with the people that, especially the people that do many different voices for animated features. I always wonder how they keep those straight because when I do voices, I have to really think, oh, this is how I'm manipulating my voice for this particular character or this audition. But I hope I remember how I did that if I either get called back or cast in the role, because you'd have so many different voices sometimes that you must have some sort of arsenal or either write it down or record yourself or make a mental note. Okay, this for this particular voice, I move my tongue over to the left side of my mouth and I, you know, turn my head or whatever it is that you do to get that voice out. I wonder if there's problems remembering what it is you did to get that voice.
I'm sure. I mean, even with like regular auditions for on camera, it's like there's roles that I've booked purely because I like put my voice up like 2 octaves higher to sound like a ditz and it worked. Or like when we did Acting Dead, Alex, I lowered my voice for that because she was supposed to be, you know, a cranky little biatch. And so I lowered my voice a little bit when we did Acting Dead, which is a great show for everyone who's listening and you should watch it.
Oh, yeah. You guys got to watch it. It's fantastic.
Wow. Well, that was a crazy story with Rent and all of the other shows. I mean, fun stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. There's so many more. Can I share one more thing?
Yes, do it.
Well, this one was this was my first commercial that I did, and it's not really an audition song, but it's more of an after I booked it sort of thing. And it was a McDonald's commercial back in the mid 90s. And it was my first big SAG job. Ooh. And it was by myself. I was going to be the lead in a McDonald's commercial. They were going to shrink me down in a green screen and make me walk inside the bag and tell the deals that were going on at the time. I was so excited. This was going to be my ticket to stardom. And I got to the set, and obviously it was just a huge green room, massive green room. And I was expecting everyone to be so incredibly professional. It was going to be very, you know, everyone was on time, et cetera, knew what they were doing. Well, it turns out they wanted at the end me to sing the McDonald's theme song and dance across the ground, across the screen. Well, I'm in a big green screen room with no marks on the floor and there was no choreographer and no musician, no one played the music, and they're like, well, can't you just dance across the floor and make something up? Well, first of all, I have to know where to start and where to end, and can you put like a mark on the ground? They're like, okay. And it's like they got all upset with me. And then I said, can I take like 10 minutes to try and think of something? And they're like, ugh, everyone take a break, he has to think of something to dance across the, they were so mean.
Oh my God.
So awful. So finally I did it and they're like, okay, now sing the theme song as you're doing it. And I'm like, well, which one? They're like, you know, the one that everyone sings. And no one on set could sing it. And I went, you mean what you want is what you get? Yes, that one, sing that one. I'm like, well, is there a musical background? And they said, no, just sing it a cappella and we'll match the music to you later. So I had to sing, I had to sing the theme song to McDonald's, choreograph my own dance across the floor, end on this particular mark. And that was the commercial. So I did it and it was completed. It was fine. I did a great job. And the day that this commercial was supposed to air, this is it was during the World Cup competition that was here in Los Angeles for soccer. And then this was 1994. And I was working for Disney at the time at the El Capitan Theater doing a live show. Yeah. And the whole cast was backstage watching TV because my commercial was going to air that day. And I was already, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. And that day was when O.J. Simpson got in his Ford Bronco and did the slow speed chase. And they shut down all the television shows and followed that chase all day long. And my commercial didn't air.
Oh my God.
Can you believe that? Of all
of all the times of day, of all the days in the year.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That had to be the day.
Wow.
So that was the big one that got away from me, Paul Nigro.
That's wild. And then you had the show shut down essentially because of September 11th. My God.
Yes, I know. I know. One would think I'm actually bad luck for shows at this point, but.
Wow. Well, what's next? What are you working on? Are you working on, I know you have been writing and whatnot. Is that right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm doing like you said before, 1,000 different things. I have a theater company that I help create down in Laguna Beach, and we're starting up new productions down there. I'm doing a lot of directing and choreographing down there. Convention work is coming back and I host at conventions. So I'm hopefully going to do a couple of those, one in Baltimore and then in Chicago. So I'll be doing that. I have a short in a festival right now, Ethnically Ambiguous, that's doing the festival circuit right now. Fingers crossed for that web series goes somewhere.
Yeah.
And I got a couple pilot pitches out that I acted in, and a movie trailer for a guy that's pitching a movie, all these little things that, you know, irons in the fire and got my hat in a lot of different rings. But one of the big things that I'm doing now is I'm editing, and I love editing, and I'm starting to put
together. I hate it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And one of the services I'm doing now is I'm filming, reading with, and editing people's self-tapes.
Oh, nice.
Because that is the wave of the future right now. It's self-tapes from here on out. And so I started doing self-tapes for people, and I've gotten a lot of clients that are booking stuff.
That's great.
So that's one of the things that I'm working on right now is filming self-tapes for people. So if you need someone to film a self-tape.
Reach out. Speaking of,
reach out to me.
What's your social media so people can follow you and reach out?
Paul Nigro. It is my name, Paul Nigro, N as in Nancy, Y-G-R-O, on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. I got all my channels going. I'm coming up with new content as well, doing some DIY projects, and I'm starting a couple things that I want to do on a regular basis on Instagram. Sort of a good news thing where I'm hosting, and I'm just talking about good stuff that happens because we need more good news, don't you think?
100%. 100%.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Well,
so keep watching.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you around and to talk to you. So thank you for sharing all of your stories with me. I really appreciate it.
You are welcome. It was a ball to be on board. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Thanks again to Paul for coming on the show and spending a little time with me. And thank you to everybody who is listening to the show right now. I have a blast doing this show. So thank you for tuning in and listening. It really means the world to me. Make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it right now. Also, if you could, hit the stars or the hearts or whatever is, you know, on that platform screen. If you could give us some love, it really does help us over here. I know every podcast person says that, but it's because it's true, unfortunately. And if you're not following us on social media, what are you doing? You should be following us and checking out the videos that we post from these interviews. And yeah, we will see you next week. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.